This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Yeah, it is, Ron. The show Ugly is in the air as we speak. And I told Ron, I said, hey, man. He texted and said, hey, look, we got on a flight. We got on an earlier flight than we expected. We also got on an earlier connecting flight, so we're not going to get home at midnight. We'll get home a little bit earlier. I said, hey, brother, see, everything's working out for you. And now I'm assuming that plane got up out of that hurricane weather over in Turks and Caicos. I mean, but it sounds like everything is working out for Ron and Courtney. All joking aside, man, prayers up. That is some rough. I mean, it ain't nothing scarier in traveling than getting on a damn steel bird and flying into a hurricane. So I hope they...
Hold on, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I hope they get... I think they're going through Atlanta. Delta took care of them. Delta, appreciate you taking care of my co-host. They're going to get them to Atlanta, and then they're going to jump on a plane and come to Houston. So Ron, the show Ugly is out, but last I heard, he is alive, and he is in the air. Luke Morrow is in. You know Luke. He sits in all the time, all across the lineup here on Sports Radio 610. He's been in here several days with me over the last four or five work days anyway. Luke, good to have you once again, man. Is everything all right? Everything all right with you on your end?
Yeah. I mean, hey, it sounds like obviously it could be a lot worse. Nice to be sitting here in a studio instead of up in that plane dealing with whatever sort of turbulence they're dealing with, but glad they're able to get back here safely. So, no, everything's good over here on my end, for sure.
I'm not going to let them hit you with that hating-ass Luke stuff, man. We can't start the show like that, man.
But it brings the fire.
I'm just letting you know I don't appreciate it. I mean, for what it's worth to you, I just don't appreciate them putting that, sticking that on you at 204. I don't appreciate
it. I appreciate that. You know, a lot of times people label you as a hater just when you speak the truth or when you're opinionated. So I think that's what happens a lot of times. But I don't mind the label.
Can I be honest? This is no jab at Reginald Atitula, because he was the one that just used it. And I know that was just tongue in cheek. But the real, like, hater attack and, like, people using that, like, when you're when you say, hey, I don't like something or I don't like this. Like when somebody's dead serious, I'm not about joking stuff, but when somebody's dead serious about all that guy's just a hater. No. I just don't. Somebody just doesn't like it, man.
Exactly.
Somebody just doesn't have the same opinions you got.
That's right.
It ain't got nothing to do. I mean, I've let somebody use the term hater in a conversation with me, and not even necessarily about me, but just in conversation. Hey, make me hotter than a firecracker.
Well, I'm like, Team Macho.
I don't know why, but that one right there.
I'm with you.
That one right there rubs me the wrong way. I tell you what else rubs me the wrong damn way. Not Lopez and his Team Macho stuff. All of a sudden, he likes quarterback crying. But the Astros, and...
Well, this is not good.
What they've put on the field recently will make you cry. It'll piss you smooth off. The Astros, for the first time since 2005, first time the Astros have been shut out in three or four games since 2005. Happened in April of 2005. Now, it can't be too terribly bad because that team did end up in the World Series, as Tyler let me know. I did not recall the results. Tyler did. It broke his heart. They got swept by the White Sox in the World Series. But they did go to a World Series. So the sky is not falling. However, Luke, this is ugly. Lost to the Orioles 7-0. I was at that game, I believe. I think that was the one I was at, wasn't it, Tyler?
Yes, that was the one you took your mother to.
Was a hell of a deal. What's the way to get Linda back? Beat the Orioles 5-4 in extras, 12 innings the next night. And then they lost to the Orioles 12-0. And then last night, they lost to the Tigers 10-0.
Too many damn zeros, bro. Like, for real. Like what? What the hell?
Yeah, it's rough. It's a hard watch. Ugh. It's a hard watch as it's going on as well. The one thing I did not do is catch much of Spencer Arrighetti last night. 5 innings pitched, 7 hits, 5 runs, 5 earned runs, by the way, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts, and he gave up 2 bombs. I know, Luke, that Spencer Arrighetti, somebody that we're all watching, but I know it's somebody that you've coined as one of the most, if not the most important guy returning off of injury from a starting pitcher perspective. Your thoughts on Spencer Arrighetti's third outing since returning?
Yeah, it wasn't good. I mean, still didn't have his command. The fastball was right over the plate, and his sweeper was sweeping out of the strike zone and non-competitive. Arrighetti is, I still believe, the most important of the returnees, but I never said this was going to work out, and it's why, leading up to the trade deadline, I spent all of July pleading for the Astros to add pitching because I think it's a fool's errand to count on these guys to come back, even Arrighetti, who made 2 starts and then missed 4 months, and expect him to give you big starts down the stretch, and expect Javier to come back after 16 months, and Luis Garcia after 27 months, and J.P. France after 15 months, and McCullers after all this stuff in the last 3 years, and expect them to give you good starts in some of the biggest games of the year. It's I think it's silly. They tried it with Verlander last year. It didn't work. The Dodgers tried it with Walker Buehler last year. It was a disaster. They moved on from him. Dustin May this year for the Dodgers. There's plenty of examples of expecting guys to come back from these injuries after long layoffs. It takes them a little while. So, no, Arrighetti was still not good last night. I still keep my fingers crossed that he will have the smoothest transition at some point than these other pitchers because it's the shortest amount of time on the shelf. But even at his ceiling for 2025, I don't know if that will still be good enough or competitive enough for the Astros to rely on these arms to try to go win in October.
Well, look, I agree wholeheartedly with you. I mean, when you flush it out and you talk about, there are several names, the Christian Javier's, hell, the Luis Garcia's, the Lance, hell, are all the guys that are returning from a starting pitching perspective have a better resume than Spencer Arrighetti. But what we've seen recently from Spencer Arrighetti, the track he was on last year, mm-hmm. He was out minimal time compared to those guys. Yeah, I think it's probably a pretty popular opinion that, hey, Spencer Arrighetti is the one that we can expect to make the smoothest transition if anybody's going to make one. And if you look back, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy and Luke, you'd be the one that I'd probably take a little criticism from. On this front, because you know what the hell's going on. I mean, I've watched Spencer Arrighetti in the Astros uniform, and I've been jacked. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I've thought, hey, this guy's got a future here.
Yeah,
I mean, this guy's got staying power. This guy's got a chance to be not Hunter Brown and not Fromber, obviously. And hell, let's be honest, maybe not even a healthy Christian Javier with that nasty stuff he's got. But he's a guy that I always looked at as, this is a quality 3 or 4 starter in a rotation. At the very least, it's that. You know what I mean? And he's kind of trending. He was trending upward. So, yeah, I mean, all of that put together, I don't think it's crazy to think that, again, once you flush it out, that Spencer Arrighetti would be the guy that you would expect to contribute here down the stretch alongside Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. But here we are 3 starts into it, and it's been rough. Like we said yesterday, I think at some point in time, we're going to have to turn the page and go, okay, now you've ramped up. All right, you've been back for 3 weeks, been back for a month. Right. Okay, now we need you to turn the corner. Now, the other part of that is, and I think this is the more important part of what we're watching right now, we can understand why the starting pitching, like even Arrighetti and Christian Javier and these guys that are coming back, we can understand why the starting rotation, although it was really good in the first half of the season, with a bunch of guys that I'd never heard of, maybe you have, but I'd never heard of that were pitching for him. We can understand as these guys return, there's going to be some lagging, there's going to be some disappointing times, there's going to be some inconsistency. These bats, I know we've had some injuries in this lineup too. We're missing Yordan Alvarez, and I get that. But hey, man. When you get shut out 3 of your last 4 games, and you can argue at a time, guys, when you need it the most. The Mariners, you still got a game and a half lead in the division on the Mariners, but the Mariners' schedule ticked up, your schedule ticked down. This was an opportunity for you to make a move, and somehow you've gone out and got swept 3 of the 4 games that you played. So
I'm sure they vomited in the stands.
The bats are a major issue right now with the Astros. You look up. Correa had a hit last night. Urias had a hit. Altuve had a hit. And then Walker had 2. There was 5 total hits in the game. And if it wasn't on the heels of a 12-0 loss, you know, shutout loss to the Orioles to wrap up that last that homestand, then it may not be a big deal. But this is becoming a problem.
It sure is. I mean, this is just a bad team right now. In the month of August, they're bottom eight in the league in batting average and ERA. They're 14-21 in their last 35 games. And in this last week, I mean, this is worse than like we've seen from the Rockies this year. I think the Rockies haven't had as uncompetitive of a stretch as the Astros. This is worse than the White Sox. Pick your worst teams in the league this year. I don't know if they've had a stretch like this. This lineup hasn't scored now in 15 innings. I mean, we could go on and on with all the ugly numbers.
We suck.
That's the easier way to sum it up than anything I could tell you. And Joe Espada, by the way, was on the flagship today, and he said something about when they asked him, he just said, to paraphrase, that's baseball. And he said something about some people want it more. The comments he made was almost like these guys have just checked out for the time being. And I know earlier Lopez was saying, watching them last night, it looked like just like mentally they just weren't in it. And that might be the most concerning part is, look, it's baseball. It's a long season. Everyone goes through slumps and everyone gets blown out and has bad games or bad weeks. But if it's that willy-nilly, like, yeah, they just don't seem to care, or the other team is more interested, especially when you talk about a first-place Tigers team last night, that's the more concerning part than just waiting for some of those bats to get hot again.
Well, look, I hate the excuse, and I don't like the manager. I don't like the manager saying that, but I will say this. For me, there's when you've got a whole lineup and you've got all your dudes, it's a long season. Now, all of a sudden, when you're having to depend on three of your five pitchers in the starter, guys that should never be starting a game for you this season in 2020, or you didn't expect to start a game in 2025. Mm-hmm. When half of your lineup at times was Space Cowboys.
It's not ideal.
And you find a way to win. You get guys back in the lineup. Boom, somebody goes out of the lineup. This has been a long-ass season already for this Astros team. Now, that's not... I mean, I hate to even bring that up because I'm not making excuses, but the reality is what he said, this has been a longer than normal season. There's a reason why Joe Espada is up for manager of the year, or at least was. It was because the Astros and what they've had to deal with has been second to none when it comes to adversity and weathering a bad storm and taxing on the manager and everybody involved. And so I could see where these guys at this point are like, whew, damn, it's been a long season. But If you're gonna be a team that can be a serious player in October, then you've got to weather this storm and they got to get this thing back right. The Astros have had a hell of a rough stretch here of late with the bats and the bullpen, and then you obviously the obvious hiccups with the starting rotation as well. Anytime Chaz McCormick is on the bump in back-to-back games, and what is that? Is that three times in the last seven? Or is that three times in the last six?
He's becoming a regular out of the back end of the bullpen.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that. I half-heartedly was joking about that yesterday, but this is getting plum ass ridiculous. The Astros, see if they can't get this thing back on the right page. The bad news is game two against Detroit. They get Tarik Skubal, which is, I mean, he is the best pitcher in baseball, the best pitcher in the American League right now.
You want to know what the over-under is tonight for the Astros team total? It's a number I've never seen for them in this golden era run before. True statement.
2.5
2.5
Yeah, that would have been my guess.
And the odds aren't great.
I think the total for the actual game has been bet up, though. It's still low. It's like 7.5, whatever. So, I don't know. Maybe they think the Tigers are going to score some runs, I guess, tonight. You know, that's the thing. You have Hunter Brown on the mound tonight, who's supposed to be your stopper. Oh, he's your ace. But then you look on the other side, it's like, oh, that's the one guy with the better ERA.
This is what the hell it's all about, Astros fans. I mean, look, I can put to bed what I've been watching in one outing tonight with Hunter Brown. This is what the hell you got a Hunter Brown for. This is what, to me, regular season baseball, it doesn't get any bigger than this. Again, you want to put all of the issues that you've had to bed, the rest of the starting rotation, the bullpen, the bats over the last whatever, however long you said it was, Luke, you want to put it to bed. Hunter Brown goes out there and throws a gem, and the Astros find a way in a nail biter to beat the best pitcher in the American League. That would be absolutely huge. When you look at their numbers, I mean, I know Hunter Brown had a rough stretch, but Hunter Brown is neck and neck with this cat. Numbers wise, this should be an absolute, I mean, appointment television, mm-hmm. must see TV. And this, to me, this is one of those defining moments for Hunter Brown. This is when Hunter Brown, and no offense, but like if this were Framber Valdez, I would expect the same things, but I wouldn't be as excited to watch it. Maybe because I've seen it from Framber, but maybe because Framber just goes about his business different. This is the Hunter Brown, there's no doubt about it, he will be absolutely jacked out of his gourd from the Detroit area, right? Grew up watching his squad. And now you're up against one of the best that the American League can throw at you, and your team has been on a skid. This is why Hunter Brown, or this is when Hunter Brown for me is must see TV. I am absolutely stoked about catching this game. Now I hope to catch a little bit of it here. It's a 5:40 first pitch, right, Tyler?
That is correct.
So we'll get some of those best bets. Don't let me slide over them tonight. Now, damn it.
Okay, I got you.
We'll get some of those knocked out earlier in the show so that we can make sure and get some Astros bets in there. We'll circle back to the Astros plenty today. What's going on over there? My damn Chaz McCormick, man. It's painful to watch. It's painful to watch. I'm fixing to start a GoFundMe or something for Chaz's to get Chaz to leave the ball in the rubber next time they put him out there. All right, the Texans, they were on the field today for one of two practices before they head to Detroit for a joint practice and a preseason game. This is a monster week for the Texans. A lot of decisions will be made. We got guys that we haven't seen on the field back on the field today. How did the offensive coordinator, how did he adjust that starting rotation on that offensive line? What did Damian Pierce look like? We'll cuss and discuss next right here on Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
You know, Tyler made a great point right as we're coming into this break here. I didn't hear Nick Caserio talk about, I think we got a good congratulations from the general manager on on that Marconi nomination. It's big time in our world.
Well, Payne and Pendergast did.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What do you mean they did?
No, I'm just kidding. GM Nick Caserio, he congratulated the whole station.
Oh, okay. I got you.
It felt a little focused on his.
Well, that's okay. I mean, hell, it's the way it's supposed to be when that's that your boys.
They start us every day.
Like, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Riding the coattails, man. We're just riding the coattails, and I appreciate them sturdy coattails because my ass is heavy. but Tyler made a point, Nick. I mean, you congratulated the station, man, and you didn't even mention the face. You didn't even mention the face of Sports Radio 610, Tyler Milner, man. If you're on YouTube or Twitch, you're
looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, I just feel like you missed an opportunity there, bro. I mean, you're not a guy that misses too many opportunities, man. T-Mill, real deal.
I mean, I didn't even ask for this, but it is what it is, and you probably should have thrown out a thank you, Nick.
It was thrust upon you, man. They didn't even ask for the rights, did they?
No.
You may be able to sue them, by the way. I think you may be able to sue them.
I was going
to
say, if we win the award, you change it from Marconi to Milner.
Yeah, that's right. That Marconi Milner, the Marconi Milner that the Sports Radio 610 won back in 2025, y'all.
That's right.
Hell yeah.
But no, Nick was on with Seth and Sean this morning, and once again, I always say this: real talk, genuine and sincere. There is, it's one thing to have a head coach or a player or general manager or a president. It's one thing to have those guys on. It's another thing when you've built rapport with somebody of that position, and then that guy is more of himself on the airwaves. That guy is more open with his answers. He's more comfortable. He trusts that those guys. And they do they've done a tremendous job getting to that point. And every time Nick Caserio comes on Payne and Pendergast, it is a must-listen radio, no doubt about it. So, again, if you do have the Audacy app, AUDACY, if you don't, download a damn thing. I've been telling you for a week. But if you do, you can use that rewind feature to go back and listen to Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast. I believe it was 7:30 this morning. So. But the Texans, they did take the field today. Monster week for the Texans here in training camp. Cut down date is August 26th, which is a week from today. It's next Tuesday. You had today's practice. You got Wednesday's practice, which will be a little bit lighter, I heard Nick Caserio say. And then I think it's pretty much on to travel day on Thursday, a little joint practice. No, travel day Wednesday, joint practice. Thursday, rest day Friday, game Saturday. So, nonetheless, the point is these are the last few reps that guys are going to get back from injury, to get back on the field and get some really good work. These are the last reps that some of these guys are going to get before the team makes a decision on whether they make the team or not. And this is a big week for the Texans. A couple of things that I've seen reported here on the Texans practice today. Cam Robinson, the big left tackle, $12 to $14 million man. He was signed to replace Laremy Tunsil in that left tackle position. He has been out for an extended period of time. He was back at practice today. And I think a lot of the questions were, when Cam Robinson comes back, the veteran that was signed to be your left tackle, that was paid to be your left tackle, what happens when he comes back and Ariante Ursary, the big rookie left tackle that has been playing really, really good of late, that has been, I would say he has been the one guy you can, not the one guy, but one of a couple of guys that you could watch play. And does he get beat? Sure. But if you watch him play, he is exactly what Nick Caserio, D'Amico Ryans, the O-line coach, the offensive coordinator, he is exactly what he wants this offensive line's mentality to be. So Cam Robinson comes back. What do they do with Ariante Ursary at left tackle? Right?
He's big as hell.
Well, the reports that I'm seeing, Ariante Ursary stayed at left tackle with the ones.
Mm-hmm.
Titus Howard stayed at right tackle with the ones. And then on the inside, it was Lakin Tomlinson, Jake Andrews at center. And that right guard position is the one that's still up in the air. You got Ed Ingram, who was a free agent sign. This also, or was he a trade? Was he a trade or a free agent sign?
Signing.
Free agent signing, because he came from Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
He was a free agent that they brought in this season. And then also Juice Scruggs, who was a former second-round pick that was expected to be the center that bounced around, plays all three interior positions. So it looks like you've got a good, solid, healthy competition going at that right guard position. I imagine this joint practice that's right around the corner is going to be big for those guys. It's also, I would imagine, with this level of player, Ed Ingram and Juice Scruggs, I would imagine that this final preseason game, they will probably get some run. They're not going to get the C.J. Stroud treatment, I wouldn't think, unless they're just convinced all out that Ed Ingram is the guy. I would imagine they would get some run. So keep an eye on the right guard position with the Texans offensive line. Ed Ingram, Juice Scruggs. Those two guys right there are going to decide whether they can leave Titus Howard at right tackle or not. And then also keep an eye on what's going on at left tackle. You got, again, a veteran, former first-round pick, guy with high expectations, Cam Robinson, that looks to be on the heels of the rookie Ariante Ursary at this point. Could change at any point. They've been rotating like crazy. But that's the way I see this offensive line right there, Luke, after the reports that are coming out of camp today.
Yeah, I don't want to read too much into today, but I did find it interesting that Cam Robinson didn't jump right back in. And, you know, earlier we were talking about the reputation of being a hater, and someone on the text line said that Ron knows of my hating capabilities. But I recall when Trent Brown was brought in, I was in with Ron that day, and I'm not a Cam Robinson guy whatsoever. And I said, much to Ron's surprise, I'd rather have Trent Brown than Cam Robinson. So all of this is to say, I'm not that surprised if Cam Robinson gets beat out even by a rookie at that left tackle position and he becomes the swing tackle, because I don't think Cam Robinson's a great option for you to be your every week left tackle. I think it's part of it is what you've seen from the tackles, but like you said, a big part of it is the success that Ed Ingram has had, which has allowed you to slide Titus Howard back to right tackle, leave Ingram at guard. So it's just that combination. We've heard the message about this offensive line just kind of find the five best, right? They shed some talent on the offensive line this offseason. Now it's about finding the best group of five. And so in that sense, maybe Cam Robinson got Wally pipped a little bit, that as he stepped away and they had to alter this offensive line, they found another five that right now is working pretty well, and they don't want to disrupt that just because Cam Robinson's back at practice.
Well, to hear Nick Caserio say it, tell it, they've got five tackles, including Trent Brown, Blake Fisher, Titus Howard, Cam Robinson, and Ariante Ursary. And when I look at this best case scenario for me, is there a chance to move Cam Robinson if he can't supplant Ariante Ursary for the starting left tackle position, then is there a chance to potentially move him? I have no idea, but as we talk about this week for the Texans before cutdown week, there are some potential trades out there. Is Cam Robinson potentially one of those guys? Also, back, just to be clear, too, appreciate Sean Pendergast, Ingram was actually a trade for a sixth-round pick from Minnesota. So that was actually a trade, not free agent.
Yeah, he was like the Mechie guy, right? He was going to get cut anyways, right, so right. Just get something for him.
Dameon Pierce was back at practice today, had a couple of runs, had a catch in today's practice, and so it was good to see him back out there. We'll dig a little bit more into that later on in the show. Right now, Nick Caserio, I just said he mentioned, Nick Caserio mentioned, he joined Payne and Pendergast. He gave us a little peek into what the identity of this team is going to be. I actually love it. I think a lot of y'all are going to probably turn your nose up at it, but we'll have some audio and we'll cuss and discuss next right here on Sports Radio 610.
Well, you guys talk about him all the time.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Ron and Show Ugly is out. Luke Morrow is in. You are definitely listening to Houston's sports leader, Nick Caserio, Texan general manager. He was on Payne and Pendergast this morning and had a lot of nuggets, man. I didn't get the final time stamp, but he usually spends 30 to 40 minutes on that damn Payne and Pendergast at once. So it is an extended conversation. If you want to hear it all, again, download the Audacy app, AUDACY, and you got it right there at your fingertips. You can go back to use a rewind feature and go back and listen to every bit of Nick Caserio. But for right now, I took a couple of audio pieces of audio here that I think are were noteworthy. I think a lot of the conversation or the unknown, I guess, with this year's Texans team, right, is offensively, what are they going to look like? I think we've probably heard enough, guys, to where, and I say heard enough from Nick Caserio and Nick Caley and D'Amico Ryans. There's been a huge shift in terminology, and I think even some of the scheme into what the Patriots were doing when Brady was winning Super Bowls and winning, playing the position at a high level and winning at a serious clip. But what does that mean? I mean, what does that really mean? I know the terminology maybe some of the concepts are going to be similar, but what do they really want this offense to look like? I think Nick Caserio gave us a little peek behind the curtain. Here's Nick Caserio talking about where this offense is. This is a 2025 offense, where this offense can improve the most.
And I'd say overall offensively, the biggest area that we can improve that's going to help us during the course of the year is taking care of the football. Like, we obviously have a defense where the ball is of the utmost importance. We have a number of guys that can take the ball away. You know, we've thrown it to the defense offensively a number of different times. So if we can mitigate that and eliminate that, I mean, D'Amico put a stat up there to the team last week. If you don't, and I've talked about this, if you don't do anything other than take care of the ball and have zero turnovers, it correlates to 80% wins. So I think as an offense, the more we can comprehend and understand that, the better off we're going to be. So just relative to your question, relative to CJ's development, I would say grasping and ownership and understanding of the offense, and then just understanding, just make the right play on a consistent basis. That's what good offensive football is all about.
Take care of the football, don't turn a damn thing over, and you're going to win in an 80% clip is what I heard right there. We got a great defense that's going to turn it over for us. We have an advantage in a sense of winning the turnover battle. We should do it damn near every week, if not every week, for 17 straight weeks, and or 17 of 18 weeks, if you will. That's what I hear Nick Caserio saying right there. Here is Nick going a little bit further on protecting the ball and limiting the obvious long yardage, tough situations that some offenses put themselves in.
Long yardage situations are always hard to overcome, and I don't know what the percentages are, but we've looked at this too. Like, if you have a negative play on first down, or just like it, just how it impacts the drive, I mean, it certainly makes a difference. So, I mean, offensive football, not only for us, it's just about positive plays, moving the ball forward, and it's in situational execution. So if we can be good in those areas, you know, we probably have a shot to be decent, not only offensively, but as a team overall.
Two things I love about this, y'all. One, they clearly have it. They clearly know what they want to do offensively. There is no five-headed monsters and this aggressive stretch in the field, vertical attack kind of conversation going on. It is clear that Nick Caserio from top, and I think D'Amico Ryans is I think before maybe he was a little more worried about the defense and letting the offense do the offense thing. Maybe you know, C.J. Stroud has a great rookie season. Nico Collins turns a corner. Maybe you go sign some guys. Maybe we got a little bit out over our skis with the aggressive stuff and all the different weapons instead of focusing on being physical, taking care of the football, staying ahead of the chains. But it is clear right now to me, hearing Nick Caserio, that right there, along with some of the things that we've heard coming out of that organization over the last month, Luke, it's clear to me what the offensive identity is going to be. Offensively, they want to play to the strengths of their defense. We're going to run the football. We're going to protect the football. We're going to stay ahead of the chains, and we're going to win the turnover battle. That ultimately is what I hear Nick saying. And I'm going to tell you, given how good we know this defense is, I love this approach from D'Amico and Nick Caserio. I love this approach in a sense of an identity as it fits with the whole team. And I'm going to tell you what else, Luke. I love this approach with C.J. Stroud. There's a lot of people out there, man, and I understand it because C.J. can do it. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of people out there that want C.J. to be in this, hey, man, let's stretch the field, man. Let's just put it all on C.J.'s back, man. Let's spin it all over the park. Let C.J. cook, all that kind of job. And again, I get it. If that were the approach, I think CJ, if you could block for him, like couldn't do last year, CJ has the ability to do those things. But I believe the best version of CJ Stroud, and I believe the best version of the Texans offense as it pertains to winning Super Bowls and winning in the playoffs is exactly what Nick Caserio is talking about. I mean, that is the luxury of CJ Stroud. I want to see it about four times this year. You know what I mean? I want to see games when they do, when the game dictates, hey, man, CJ, you're going to throw it 40 times today. Hey, CJ, we're going to stretch the field a little bit. Hey, CJ, we need a 2-minute drive here at the end of the first half or at the end of the game or both to win this thing. Put it in CJ's lap. You got CJ Stroud. That's why he's here. It's what he's all about. But 75% of the time, hey, man, let's just stay ahead of the chains. Let's just protect the football. Let's just be smart. Let's process at a high level and take calculated risk instead of deciding we're going to take a risk before we ever break the damn huddle. I love what I'm hearing from Nick Caserio as it pertains to the offensive unit and the overall team as well as the quarterback loop.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, our defense is really good, so let's just not screw things up on the offensive side of the football. But I think from a fan perspective, they might look at this offense and find it to be kind of boring, but a lot of times boring is what wins, and being efficient can be boring, especially on the offensive side of the football. But this is the MO of defensive head coaches, is they want to play good defense. They don't want to turn the football over on offense. They want to play the ground game and clock control and play keep away a little bit offensively, and they don't need the big plays downfield. And so it's what we were talking about yesterday. I don't know, you know, the explosiveness will come over the course of the year, but I don't know how much explosiveness you're going to get from this offense, and it's going to be what we've seen in the preseason with a lot of these quicker passes and then trying to stay ahead of the chains with just guys like Nick Chubb plowing forward and not getting necessarily these huge busting runs, but just being consistently picking up a few yards, falling forward, and staying ahead of the chains. But, you know, like the Vikings with a defensive head coach, a really good defense, they made it to a NFC title game with Case Keenum just simply because they're like, hey, you know what? We're going to make it easy on you. Just don't screw things up. There's been other examples, too. I had another one that I just forgot. Oh, Mike Vrabel, defensive coach with the Titans, and they had Ryan Tannehill. They were the number one seed in the AFC. It's just like, we're going to keep it simple for you on the quarterback. You don't need to throw it downfield. You're going to limit your interceptions. We're going to play good defense, take care of the football, win a lot of games. And so I'd imagine you'd see C.J. Stroud get back towards that historically low interception rate from his rookie year compared to last year where he had quite a few more turnovers because it'll just be a little more simpler and efficient on the offensive side of the football.
Well, you stay upright. You don't take as many hits. You're not as frustrated. The pressure that's on you is significantly less. And let's be honest, when you do, a lot of times if you're good at doing what Nick Caserio just said, a lot of times the shots, the big plays, they just present themselves and hit you right in the face. Instead of going out there and having to force it and trying to get it and looking for it and holding the ball and doing this and doing that and trying to design everything for it, play a certain brand of quarterback and a certain brand of offense, and then Nico's going to bust one. Nico's going to hit a crease. Nico's going to get over the top. They're going to start paying attention, and they're going to sense the game getting away from them, so they're going to start squeezing down on some of the underneath stuff or trying to stop the run game. They're going to put Nico on an island one-on-one with a corner, and then you have the ability to go eat. It becomes very, very simple. At least, you know, theoretically, that's the game. We'll see if they can get it accomplished. It looks like D'Amico and Nick have a very good idea of what they want this offensive unit to look like beyond just New England and this and that. I mean, it looks like there is a method to the madness, and I, for one, greatly appreciate it. All right, football talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can dang sure count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus. All season long, visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Now, we talked a little bit about the O-line shuffle going on, and I don't think that we realize how important Ed Ingram is to this mix. How important, I never thought it was going to be this. I never thought it was going to be like this, but Ed Ingram holds the keys to the Texans being able to correct their protection problems from 2024. Who would have thunk it? That's next.